Listen to the Carbcast on iTunes and subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under The Carbcast, or check our website at www.thecarbcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer, or you could always make a whip. The fish, of course. Welcome to the Carbcast, introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chalks. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your hosts, it's Mark and Jamie!
Hello and welcome to episode 48 of the Carbcast. We've had a week off, but you still there, Mark?
I'm still here. I'm raring to go. Full of energy.
Good. You've been fishing?
I have been since we last spoke, and I didn't catch any bream. I caught four carp.
That's always a good sign.
Yeah, and my favourite method as well.
Which is?
Well, like any true northerner, single hook baits.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, I had a bit of a change. Like, instead of going straight down after work on a Sunday, I delayed a little while and got down there about, I think it was about 4:30 on Monday morning I got there. I did that on purpose so I could hopefully catch a few fish given the location away in the morning.
Yeah.
I saw nothing. But now, what I did find was, around the back of an island, there's some swans. It's an area I know to be about 5-6 foot deep, and these swans were tipping up and feeding off the weed. So I thought, that's got to be as good a bet as any. You know, carp love weed. I know there've been a couple of caught from the similar sort of area. So dropped in a swim, and as anything, I'm not going to start bashing a marker float around as soon as I get to a lake, especially, well, bite time. It took about 30 minutes for my first bite.
Yeah.
So, which was mental drop back. Like, someone's literally cut the line. I picked the rod up, and it's about 30 yards away to the left from where I'd hooked it. Where I'd cast, sorry.
Yeah.
So, and then it was another three on pretty much the same. Literally, just my old favourite multi-rigs. Stinky pop-ups. They're all, like, soaked in this gloop that LA Baits have given us. And, well, away then. Mid-afternoon, action slowed down, I'm sorted, I'm settled in, I'm quite happy. I'm thinking I might be onto a shed full here. Had a little bit of a lead around, found nice spots, put some bait in, and nothing else happened.
No.
No. Well, the wind come in very, very strong at night. It was a northerly, and my God, it was cold. So, I blame the wind.
So that's good. You've had four fish, no bream. Yeah, step up in the world.
Yeah, and well, my car's having a clutch transplant this week, and next week I'm hoping to make my debut on my new Syndicate, which I'm assured doesn't have any bream in it.
After fishing lakes with like nuisance fish, it's just heaven, isn't it? Fishing somewhere that's not got any bream, or I've had nuisance roach on certain lakes, tench. It's nice every now and again, but when you like get all your traps set and everything's right, and then you just start getting them bleeps after dark, and it's just like all your hard work's ruined, do you remember Willington? We both fished there.
Oh God, the amount of tension small bream in there, well, they were torture.
Yeah, they definitely cost me fish on certain times. So, there weren't a big stock of carp, was there? But there was shitloads of bream and tench, 10 a night each, no sleep whatsoever, and you have to keep resetting the rod just in case, you happen to get that carp bite. And that was really hard work. I always found the stiff links, like the Terry Hearn stiff boom thingy, you know, with the stiff boom section and the stiff sort of curved hook section. I always used to find that that slowed them down.
Yeah, I think any rig with a high pop-up, you know, with a hinge stiffy or even a chod rig, you know, it does slow the bream in, because they are literally, when they feed, they are glued to the bottom. One of the ones I had a few weeks back actually foul hooked in the top of its head. That's with like a 1-inch pop-up.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, we're sharpening the hooks as well. You know, they now penetrate bream skull.
So we have had a week off. Life and other stuff got in the way for me, and then we just couldn't really hook up on a date, could we, Mark? And then it's nice to be popular, isn't it? It's nice to have messages from people going, "Where are you?" Like some less friendly ones. What was the one that you read out to me one day? Some cheeky guy posted some of your lines on "Get a fucking move on" or something. Forget what it was.
Yeah, it's nice people get aggressive when they can't get the free product.
Yeah, that thought did cross my mind, and you know, I. If you're somebody that's never supported this podcast financially, either by buying an item of clothing, a knowledge DVD, buying one of the extra packages, or subscribing yearly to the extra, if you've never paid a penny towards us and just sat there whinging that we haven't put a free show out one week, then have a word with yourself, because there are going to be many weeks off over this summer, I can assure you. I mean, I've got a week in France. 4 days later, I'm off to... I'm going to Luke Moffitt's in France, the Graviers, and then like 4 days later I'm probably going to be away for like 12 days in Lake Bled in Slovenia. And while I aim to do some recording while I'm there, the actual, you know, editing up a podcast, having an internet connection good enough to hook up with you, Mark, and you know, it's if we can do it, we will, but there could be a 3-week period with no podcast quite happily. So you know, be prepared. It's free, and we will put them out when we can. But we don't earn a living off this. You know, we don't earn enough money to do to do pretty much anything. It costs money to put this podcast on. We do it for the love of it. I mean, if you know, if we both earned a wage out of it, a monthly wage where we, you know, it covered the mortgage and all the podcast bills, and maybe we would make sure that it was out, but it's not. So unfortunately, trying to earn money and life is going to come in front of putting a podcast out, so please be aware of that. I mean, if you want to support us and you want to buy us a drink, maybe we can get a donate button put on the website or something, if you really do you know, want to make sure we do it weekly. If you want to motivate us, then
need a Jaffa Cakes button.
A Jaffa Cakes button, yeah, yeah.
Every time this button gets clicked, I get a Jaffa Cake.
Yeah, we'll get a tip jar for Jaffa Cakes put on the website. Yeah, I'll have a word of Reese if we can do something along those lines. You can also support us by buying some clothing. Everybody said they wanted Carpcast clothing. We outlaid £3,500 on some hoodies, hats and t-shirts, and I'm looking at numerous boxes of hats, hoodies and t-shirts in my shed. So, you know, we laid out £3,500 for that because people wanted them, and we don't make any money on them, but I wouldn't mind the £3,500 back at some point. So but we're in no rush, but if you want to buy an item of clothing, you might have an opportunity to win a place on the Royston Carpcast Social, which is Kevin Nash's brand new lake. We're doing it in August, aren't we, Mark? And there might be a couple of spaces on that if you so wish to join us. Alan Blair's going to be there giving coaching during the entire duration. We've got Fired Up Barbecues. Richard is going to come down do the evening. www.firedupbarbecues.com .co.uk, sorry. And if you saw the videos of our Cromo social, his food is amazing. And you can hire him for any do of your own. You know, wedding, functions, party, whatever you want. They do all sorts of catering, indoor and outdoor. And if you want to sample it for yourself, you can do that on the Carpcast social in Royston. never know, might even get Mr. Nash himself to come down. I will have a chat with him about that next time. But Alan Blair is definitely going to be there. Frank Warwick said he would come if he could. He might show his face. Certainly going to be a load of us. There's at least 20 people already signed up for that. And I think we've probably got a couple more spaces should anybody be really desperate to do it. And we're going to give a space away, aren't we, Mark?
We are, with the our photograph competition. The gist of that is wearing any item of our merchandise, from a hat, a t-shirt, a hoodie, just send us an imaginative photograph. Use your imagination. We've got a couple of brilliant entries so far, and let's see if we can get a couple more in. If then we'll make a decision, won't we?
Yeah, we'll pick one sort of mid-July time, maybe. Give you a chance to book some time off if you need any time off. It is a weekend thing, the social. It's like sort of 12 o'clock Friday till Sunday. So, you know, you might just need a Friday afternoon or something. But we'll probably pick somebody mid-July to come and join us for nothing. That one chap put a great deal of effort, didn't he? He's obviously a keen Carpcast fan, because all the things we've took the mickey out of, the slack lines, the carp and not sheep.
Drop shot in,
yeah. There was
Jaffa cakes,
there was all sorts of detail in. He's basically got everything, including the sheep, in one picture and took a picture. It was a fantastic photograph. I believe you've had one from Gillam's in Thailand as well, haven't you, Mark?
I have, yes, and it was nice to see our Carpcast t-shirt with a fantastic backdrop of Gillam's in the background. So, yeah, so if you think you can beat those two, send us a picture. Just post it on our Facebook page, messages with it.
Yep, I think our website's all working now. Reese has been working on a new version of the website, and all there's been a few issues with people logging in and stuff. If you contact Reese, if you're having problems, send us a message to our Carpcast page, which Reese has been monitoring, or message Reese Carpenter on Facebook direct. And he's been really good at sorting out any problems people have been having. So we apologise if you have tried to support us and not been able to get on the website. It was down for a few days, but I believe he's sorting all the problems as it is. Carpcast social, www.thecarpcast.com is where you can find stuff. It's all the extra contents on there. We've got a new load of extra stuff coming out with some new guests that we're just finalising now. You can buy the package of the previous six guests: Kevin Nash, Alan Blair, Frank Warwick, Ronnie DeGroote, and Daryl Peck and John Mack. That's seven. Is it seven? Yeah. You can buy the package of all of those people telling stories. About their favours, captures, fish losses, all sorts. It's fantastic content. No adverts or anything on there. Just straight up fun stories, stuff, and a few tactics and stuff from us as well.
Yeah, I've spent over the last week or two, I've recorded three top anglers for the next set of extras, and take it from me, there are some cracking stories in there. Some great ones, informative and funny.
Yes, we've been trying to get Dave Lane on as well. He's kind of said he'll do it. I've messaged him a number of times, and he's extremely unresponsive to messages. Just sends me like thumbs up and stuff, and then I'm like, right, send me a number, Dave. Let's get it locked down, and then hear nothing again. So feel free to pester him, because he's kind of said he'll do it. The extra content and the normal interview on the Carpcast, but yeah, feel free to pester him, because you might get more joy than I have. But if he feels how loved and wanted he is, then he may just tip him over the edge to reply. What else we got? You seen anything on the net?
It's on the net. It must be true.
There's a few things on the net. You know, I've made a few notes. And first thing, you see some of the French lakes that are affected by the floods they've had over there recently?
Yeah, they've had a hell of a lot of rain over there, haven't they?
It's been mental. I think I did see one comment. I can't remember who it was from, but they basically alluded that some of the fish might actually find their way back into the rivers. I don't know what they mean.
No, well, I believe the law in France is you are actually allowed to take fish from the rivers, but not for commercial gain. So if you go and buy a French lake to rent out, or to, you know, to sell spots on, if you go and do that and then stock it out the rivers, as many people have done, then that's kind of frowned upon. But it isn't actually illegal to take fish out the rivers over there. But you can see where the rules get greyed slightly. But yeah, maybe some of them will go back. As you said, I've seen lots of people on French holidays that have just been swamped out. You know, the bivvies, the water's halfway up the bivvy and stuff. And they were still catching most of the ones I've seen, but it looked uncomfortable conditions, which is probably not what you've expected if you booked a French holiday in sort of June or end of May, June. You probably didn't expect that, did you? You were packing your shorts, T-shirts, and thinking you're just going to get suntanned all week. It's probably held the spawning back slightly, hasn't it, over there? I mean, I bet there was some bigger weights.
Yeah, I mean, when are you going down to Moffitt's for his scoured fish that's done the record before?
Yeah, I'm going last week of this month. I think it's about the 25th of June, something, I think we go.
You better be doing an in session for catching. Was it the Scar and the Brown of the big two, isn't it?
Certainly will, and we've actually got an in session this time. We've got a Carpcast fan went to Saint Armand, which is a lake that we helped promote earlier in the year. A friend of ours, Christoph, is one of the, and Christoph and Lee own that lake. We did a special interview, didn't we, with the pair of them a little while ago. And a number of Carpcast listeners have been to fish the lake or are booked in to fish the lake. And Ben Smethurst went over there and he did exactly that. And he's done a little bit of a blog for us. So let's just go and check Ben out now.
In session.
Hi there. You joined me at St. Armand Leisure on the second day. Had 2 days worth of travelling from the UK. Me and the missus and little girl came in the van. So it was a nice little trip. You can fly down here for about €150, but we decided to make a little bit of a trip out of it and stop a couple of times. So yeah, second day. It's been a bit slow on the fishing front, to be honest. I do think that they're spawning at the moment because of the they're all in the margins and you can hear them boshing a lot. And I think they're in spawning mode. But yesterday I had a fish out. I knew the biggest fish I've caught is 36.2, and today I've just put back a 42-pound 2-ounce mirror carp. Absolute stunning fish. Over the moon isn't a word, really. If I'm a bit quiet on this, is because I'm not used to doing this sort of stuff, so it's a bit weird speaking into a phone line. Now, the place itself, Christoph is the bailiff. Top bloke, really looks after you, nothing's too much trouble, putting bait out for you, really, really nice bloke. The place itself is paradise. Standing here now looking out to about a 4-acre lake, obviously just myself fishing it, the wife and the little girl, and I'm just looking over trees, mountains, hear the crickets in the background, kingfishers flying around. Sun's out at probably about 23 degrees. Pretty much perfect, really. The missus has never fished before. She had her first carp was a 20-pounder, 20-pound 2-ounce, so she's chuffed, and Christoph, the bailiff, helped her take photos. Told her how to obviously hold the fish and the right carp care and, you know, just fish welfare, so that was nice. Little girl had never been fishing before. She's about 3 years old, and she has had about 12 small fish out, and she had a tench of about 1.5 pounds, so she's over the moon. It's not hard fishing. I'm fishing about 45 yards out in a silt gully. I'm fishing pink wafters on basically a multi-rig. Oh, and I think I might have just had a take. Hang on. Right, I'm now into a fish. So it's trying to take me in a snag, so I'll come back on and do another blog when I get in and tell you the weight. So yeah, life for the carp car. So speak to you soon. Right, welcome back. Sorry about that interruption. Just netted another 31-pound mirror. Sorry. So over the moon. Right, I'm now gonna get some photos done and getting back into the lake. But hey, fantastic. First day was a little bit slow, one fish apiece, and now it's starting to pick up. Put about 10 kilos in, so we're just going to keep the bait going in. little and often, little and often, little and often. But yeah, happy days. Speak to you later.
So thank you to Ben. We'll check back him back in with him in a little while. If you Ben does like video blogging as well, and he has a page on Facebook. So if you want to check it out, it's Ben Smethurst Carp Blogger, and he puts videos on there. So have a search for that. I'll get you to put a link in on our page somewhere, Mark, or in the official Carpcast fan page, one of them.
Yeah, well, or both.
Or both, yeah. Yeah, stick it on there, and we'll check back in with Ben in a bit on St. Armand. I've got a worth a look, actually.
Worth a look.
Oh, what you got? What's worth a look?
What's worth a look? It's a children's book about carp. So, I don't know if... I mean, you've not got any young children, Mark, but...
We've got a cat. Can't read, though.
We've got a cat, too, and it's... in fact... My cat, have I told you this? My cat's nearly ended up being taken to the vet on a number of occasions to be put out of my misery. Because, as you know, I've recently moved back into an old house, completely renovated it. The whole house been plastered and painted and new carpets and everything. Anyway, the cat, we wallpapered the two chimney breasts downstairs. Downstairs is like, you know, like you've got like the front and back room. They're all knocked into one to make like one big room. There's two chimney breasts in there, and spent a fortune on some really nice expensive wallpaper that changes colours and looks a bit psychedelic when you move around. It had been up about 2 days when the cat decides to use both chimney breasts, all four corners of said chimney breasts, as like a scratching post. It's never done it before. It just likes the texture of this new wallpaper, and it's trashed it. It's like £400 or £500 worth of damage. After spending pretty much 2 months doing up the house for it to be just finished, and he's just trashed it all.
Bad pussy.
We have a new. It did it right in front of us as well. We just sat down on the old sofa, which I don't mind him scratching. Watching telly, and bang, just right in front of us, claws up on the wall, ripped it all off. I haven't got the heart to do it again. B, I've run out of money. And C, it's easier just to kill him. And we've ordered a new sofa. I mean, there's 8 weeks to live on the sofa. It's been about 3.5 weeks. I almost don't want it to come, because he's definitely not going to survive another day if he starts doing the corners of the sofa, which has previously been his favourite thing to scratch. But when we got the cat, the sofa was years old, so I wasn't really too bothered.
We got a little scratching post for him.
Yeah, he won't use them. We bought him. He just won't use them. He likes the wooden fence panels outside. He likes that.
Yeah.
And he likes the chimney breasts, which are obviously wallpapered. It must be just the texture of the wallpaper that he likes. It's like, it looks furry, although it's not. Have you seen that film, Get Him to the Greek, with the furry wall? It kind of looks a bit like
No,
that.
I haven't.
Oh, it's a funny film. Yeah, it rubbed the furry wall. But anyway, yes, cats. But anyway, back to our worth of look. If you have young children, you'll notice those little square kids books that you can get. They're all about lots of different subjects. A lot of them like rhyme, and you know, they're like very simple stories that are nicely illustrated. Anyway, a chap called Alan Harrison sent me a message some months ago now. Said he was writing a children's book. Sent me a nice little story that did he say he can't really read or write that well, Alan? I forget the actual message now. I suppose I ought to find it. He has kept his word. He's got the publisher, which is a decent publisher, Austin McCauley Publishers. They have sent me a copy of this book to review, and it's called Curious Colin Carp. Now, obviously, it's a kid's book, but it's really nicely done. It's in keeping with the other similar, you know, like kind of... preschool books. I used to read these to my daughter at night, and my godchildren as well, Dave's kids. I've sat many an evening with them reading them these books, and there's one actually about carp, and it's basically about Colin, who's a curious carp. I really like it. It's very nicely done. If you have young children, I would say it's essential. You're going to buy them these types of books anyway to read in the evenings. You know, they're usually about animals or whatever, and so why not have one about a carp? Kind of starts off, you know, there's a picture of a carp swimming around lily pads. It's like, curious Colin Carp was a beautiful common carp with glorious golden scales which shimmered in the crystal clear water. That's like one page, and you turn it over and he's got a mate who's Mary Miracarp, or Marie Miracarp. And basically, here's a spoiler alert. Curious Colin Carp finds two nice boilies on the end of a hair rig and decides to yam them, gets caught, and manages to do up the angler in a lily pad, stitches it, ditches the rig. Sorry, I apologise if you're going to read this. I've just ruined the story for you. But I'm sure your children won't mind, because they read these books over and over again. Old Curious Colin, common carp, gets nailed on a double snowman orange boilie, but manages to get away with it in the reeds. And my, what a curious carp Colin was. It's a lucky escape. But I strongly recommend it if you have young children, or, you know, Christmas presents, birthday presents for godchildren. It's published by Austin McCauley. I'm pretty sure you can get it on Amazon. You can get it there, or Goodreads is a website, or the Austin McCauley website. You can get it from all of those. I would say it's a nice present for your children, godchildren, or whatever. Curious Colin Carp, definitely worth a look.
Worth a look.
There's a couple of well-known carp in the real world called Colin, isn't there? There's Colin the Big One in the Shallow Lagoon, which has been out recently at ounces under 50.
Yeah.
And there was that French one, I think it was about £80, that Crowe had. That was a big fat Colin.
Yeah, true.
That one.
Very true. Colin. I wonder if they were as curious as Colin. I'm not actually sure. But yeah, certainly check it out. I mean, props to Alan for getting in touch with us. Thank you to Austin McCauley for sending it us. And it's definitely worth a look. I mean, in fact, I've had it for quite a few weeks, actually. I'd forgotten on a couple of shows to review it. And I've been dying to give it to my godchildren. That's like Dave's kids at a perfect age for that book. So now I've reviewed it, I can actually give it to him. Oh, yeah. Good.
Just while you're doing a worth a look, I've got to slip this one in, because you like slipping fresh podcasts that you listen to, and I found one the other week. I think it's brilliant. It's the Comedian's Comedian podcast with Stuart Goldsmith.
Oh, yeah.
There's all your favourite comedians being interviewed on there, and I've listened to quite a few of them, like, you know, Ross Noble, Dara O'Brien, what's his name? Al Murray's on there as well.
Yeah.
Worth a look, or listen.
Certainly. And while we're kind of going over things, I had a message from Lewis Porter from Fox. Remember when we were discussing with Nashi, he actually messaged me to say how much he enjoyed the last Nashi interview, which was Nashi's new monthly feature, of which I'm probably going to pick a winner for the Slaphead competition. I'm going to pick that next week, and I'm pretty sure I know which one's going to win it. I just need to get a jingle made, and it should be all done before the last show of the month, which is when Kevin Nash comes on. I think we do Rob Hughes, the penultimate show of the month, and Nash on the last one, and we're going to get somebody from Fox, either Lewis or Sean himself, to give a monthly update on that, and we hope to get Danny Fairbrass on as well regularly. But after listening to the Nashy one, Lewis sent me a message saying that he really enjoyed listening to it, and it's worth mentioning that the Fox lines are accurately stated, as Fox have signed up to the EFTA, is it EFTTA, line charter, which is like a kind of body. You remember we discussed that some people just put a diameter and a breaking strain that's not always accurate, but it's more like a marketing thing. But you know that they're actually, we know a 0.35 line actually breaks. They're usually advertised as £15. They generally break somewhere between 18 and 22. Now, if you sign up to this line charter, or like tournament lines, have to be exactly rated, don't they? Because these are competition stuff. And anyway, there is a body called EFTTA line charter. And Lewis is saying Fox's Exocet, £23 is 0.40, which most companies would package that as £15, but obviously they're giving the true rating. And he's saying our £20 is 0.37 mil and so on. So he's basically just backing up kind of what we said, and saying that Fox are actually signed up to that line charter and their stated weights and stuff are accurate.
That's interesting. That's if you think about the you know, the P line, because obviously around Europe it's extrusion, the same product in America is evolution. But if you look at the 0.35 that we use in America, it's rated at 21, and over here it's rated at 16, I think it is.
Yeah, no, I think the 0.30 is 16. But the thing with the P line is some of them are in kilos, some of them are in pounds, and the kilos and the pounds don't add up. Like, yeah, some of them say 9 kilo and like 14 pound, and like 9 kilos, like 20 pound. They just don't add up, and I don't know why. It must be like a marketing thing. But again, that's why I've always gone off the diameter of line. Most 0.35s break at around 18 to 21 pound, roughly. You know, if you got a bit thicker, it's going to break a bit stronger and slightly lighter. So, but yeah, the Fox ones are accurate anyway. The Exocet, 23 pound is 0.40, and props to Fox for advertising it as 23 pound, because, like I say, most people would package a 0.40 as 15. If I remember, the original Nash Bullet was 0.38, I think it was, and that was sold as 15, but actually broke about 24 pound. I mean, it was really good. That was the main line. As long as you didn't need to cast more than sort of 1900 yards, that was my kind of first choice line.
Yeah, mine as well. It's only when that was discontinued that I started exploring and landed on P line.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
But we're playing around with lines in the shop the other day, and there's some good ones out there, and there's some absolute tosh as well. To be fair, you know, naming no names, but there's one 15-pound line that I can snap in my hands.
Wow.
Yeah, there's another one which actually used the P line that I got in the boot as a benchmark. You know, it was a little bit of the shop with like a bit of broken plasterboard, so I was just testing abrasion. It took 23 pulls of the P-line across this, you know, with quite a bit of tension on it to snap it, and 4 of the other line.
Wow.
So, again, these are all tests that I do with every line I'm going to use anyway, so it's interesting to see. You know, not going to name different products that are substandard, although maybe I should.
Yeah.
But, should we move along from P-Line, because we don't get paid for talking about it?
So what we do get paid for is DNABakes.com. DNA are a fantastic bake company. Mark Holmes has endorsed them for many times. He's done like the Evolution Cured, like the solid cured hook baits, but they do all sorts of special offers at the minute, and as supporters of the Carp Cash, you can get an extra 5% discount off anything on their website by using the code you can use the code CARPCAST5 when you check out for a 5% discount on top of their already decent, most of them are post free package deals. Delivered direct to your door. They do a fluoro pop-up deal where you get like five different colours, their fluoro pop-ups, the fluoro candy sticks, they do a post free deal of that, and fluoro wafters, and they do the zig packs where you get the Fox Zig aligners in there, and they do like a 5 kilo boilie deal where you get 5 kilo of boilies and a pot of the hook baits. That's £45. There's a boilie deal number 2 where you get 5 kilo of boilies, pot of hook baits and a litre of your liquid of choice, which is £55, and they do some fantastic liquids. We did a whole show where Mark Holmes was talking about how he fishes with liquids, like dropping liquids out in the different receptacles and containers, and you know, just having all that attraction in the swim. And if you have a look on the DNABakes.com website, you'll be able to see all the different liquids that they do. They're all pretty cheap, and there are loads of them. And I think they're doing like weekly deals at the minute as well. They're changing them every week. And there was a liquid deal this week. Hopefully, it'll still be going when you listen to this. But yeah, you can choose a number of different liquids. Again, post free deals, they're doing a 10 key boily deal number one, which is 10 key of boilies and a pot of hook baits for 80 quid, which is pretty damn cheap. And a boily deal two is the boilies, hook baits, and a litre of your choice of liquid for £90. There's a 50 key one as well. You can have 50 kilos of freezer bait, which can be split into two different sizes if you wish. Pot of matching corked or swafters, pop ups, and a litre of hydro wheat or beta stim, and that's 320 quid. You can get extra discount off all those by using the code CARPCAST5 when you check out. DNABaits.com. And we do a DNA tip of the week as well, Mark. Who's it from this week?
We have, it's Chris Bones' second tip.
Ah. So let's get Chris on.
DNA tip of the week.
So another tip from me for one of our, well, probably one of my favourite products that DNA do is the Sticky Sweet. Sticky Sweet is a super sweet liquid, as it's named, and it's super sticky. It's designed to go onto zigs, especially was when we worked on it, and we made it thicker so it bound to the zig better again, so you don't lose it through the water column. But one of the things I've been doing with it lately is I've been creating my own colours. So I take some white pop-ups and then I mix the Sticky Sweet with food colourings. So I've been trying playing around with blues, different greens, different purples, different reds. After speaking to Rob Hughes about colour spectrums in water, deeper the water goes, water changes colours at certain depths and everything becomes greens. And blue was one of the colours that he played around with. So what I've been doing is using the Sticky Sweet, mixing it with a very small amount of blue food colouring, and then dyeing some of our milky malt pop-ups and wafters. So I've got them in lots of different colours, and again, a different colour, especially in the match fishing that I'm hugely into, just that little difference can be a massive edge. So yeah, Sticky Sweet, a little bit of food colour, and have a little play with colours.
DNA tip of the week.
So have we seen anything else on the net?
It's on the net, it must be true.
There's a few. It's the latest in the Carp Society saga. You know, the new Carp Society, I say regime, that's probably the wrong word, but the controlling people have set up a fighting fund to help with the legal costs of fighting the court cases that are impending.
Yeah, they have. It's a crowdfunding thing. They're trying to raise £50,000. It's on justgiving.com. You can just go there and search for the Carp Society, or there is links on the Carp Society page. I think Paul Boychat is the page owner on here. He's set up this fund. I'm looking at the minute. They've raised 14% of the 50K, which is £7,375 of the 50K that they're trying to raise. This is for legal funds to fight off the old regime that have just took the gloves off, and it looks like they're have no intention of doing anything with the society other than trying to get the funds out for themselves.
Do you know what I think we should do in the interest of fairness with, was it David Mannell and what was the name of the other fella?
Malcolm Collier.
Yeah, that's it. I think we should invite them on the Carpcast to hear their side of the story and ask them some questions.
Do you think they're going to speak publicly?
No. More chance of, I don't know. More chance of me going fishing to Icombe and not catching bream. Yeah. It'd be fun though, wouldn't it? I'm sure we'd all like to hear some of the answers they'd give.
I don't think they want to answer to anybody. They're just out there to take a retirement. You know, they can't show their face in the carp world ever again. They're just out. I don't think there's any shame there now. There's just no need to answer anything to anybody.
They are the Sepp Blatters of carp fishing.
That'd be a good show. It's a poll. Who's more bent, Sepp Blatter or the Carp Society regime? Like, it'd be a tough
there's
one.
Definitely parallels there.
Yeah, for sure. But anyway, if you want to go and support the Carp Society, they're trying to raise 50K. Just Giving page. It's a crowdfunding thing. Go and check it out. What else we got? Anything?
I've seen this. I've seen it in the past, but it has popped up twice recently.
Yeah.
Which is the same catch reports appearing on two different bait company pages claiming the fish was caught on their bait.
I've not seen that.
I've seen it twice. And whenever this happens,
yeah,
people are going to take screenshots and name and shame you. which is exactly what I've seen. One was deleted pretty quick, which so I don't know if it was people on a wind up, and I think the other one was there for quite a while and got quite a few shares.
So basically, someone's caught a fish, they've sent it to one bait company and said, we caught it on your bait, and then sent it to a different bait company and said, we caught it on your bait. Obviously, yeah. Trying to get, what, freebies from two different companies?
Yeah, I think, the first one I saw was a great big French common. You know, it was claimed on one company's bait, it was on their page. And then I think it was on the kid's own Facebook page saying, I caught this, blah, 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 thanks to so-and-so bait company. And it was screenshotted and shared all over the place.
Well, that's one thing about social media and kind of instant news. You can't really hide from this stuff anymore, can
you? No. I was walking around Rutland Water looking at my phone, chuckling to myself all the while. Wife was asking, what are you doing? She thought I was watching porn or something, but...
I don't know. I see a lot of stuff... people criticising the modern carp scene, saying that people are just out there for free stuff and whatever. And I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm not as connected to it, but I don't see that as much anymore, because I actually think it's probably harder to get with, certainly one of the main firms, probably harder than it's ever been. Like we had that craze of maybe 10 years ago, people started taking on consultants, which were basically, just people that got discount, field testers, they were the actual name. Consultants were a bit more involved with the company, but field testers were just people that were getting the baits slightly cheaper and expected to, basically just put catch reports in to promote a bait company. Is a pretty standard way of promoting. And then you had this sort of thing, you got lots of young, keen, decent carp anglers that thought, oh, maybe there's money in this, maybe I can, make a living out of fishing or whatever. And I think everybody now knows that you can't. Even the top guys are not making what you'd call a decent living from fishing, unless you're a manufacturer, shop owner, you own an actual business within fishing. But actual, money for just going fishing, which is the end of the day, that's the thing we all want. You can go and work hard in any business and make some money, but I think nobody's under the illusion now that you can just get paid to go fishing. I don't think anybody actually thinks that's a thing. So I don't know, I don't see as much of it anymore of all this kind of whoring out.
It's there, yeah. I see I see a lot of anglers coming in, and nice people. I hope it doesn't sound like I'm berating them, but there's people that are always wearing the hoodie, repping whatever bait company, and fair play. But in the same way, when you look at Facebook and catch reports and hashtags and everywhere, and I've been out, I've caught so-and-so from your local part lake, thanks to so-and-so bait. But a lot of the time, it's not thanks to so-and-so bait. It's thanks to your watercraft and where you put that bait. You'd have caught that fish on a tiger knot as well.
Yeah, I made my own bait for years. Don't get me wrong, I love the bait that I use. I use the Nash bait. I'm using the Key at the minute, and that's a great bait. But I've caught on literally hundreds of different baits over the year, and I'm confident that I'm always going to catch on whatever bait I'm using, whether that be a tiger knot, some sweet corn, a zig, plastic... whatever, it's always going to be the case. I'm probably going to catch fish when I should catch fish. I was actually having this conversation the other day, actually, with who was it now? Might have been Roger or someone that basically saying, can you think of times in your life where you should have caught but didn't, and you think it was the bait was the reason why you didn't catch? Have you had any examples like that?
Not for a long, long time.
Exactly.
Certainly in recent years, obviously I changed to LA bait earlier this year, and when you've got a name like John Baker, it gives you confidence, but there's still that doubt, and it's new to you. And previously I was using Nash bait even for a couple of years after leaving them, which I've caught all my big fish on, mega confident in it. It's always a bit of a leap of faith, but when I was in that situation where I'm thinking I should catch, I have done. It gives you confidence.
I you know, don't claim to be any sort of expert on bait. I've just picked a few things up that I've heard from people that do know about bait over the years. You know, many long chats with Gary Bays and various other people that own bait companies. But I remember one time years ago where it was the bait. I'd use this bait. I was using, it was, you know, Alan Taylor, well-known angler, made the Shanticock DVDs many years ago, a friend of Kevin Maddox.
Was it Crafty Catcher or...?
It was called Whacker Catcher the Dog's Bollocks. Yeah. It was a picture
of a
dog.
Yeah, I remember the logo. We got big gonads hanging out.
Yeah, some hairy bollocks on the dog. It was called the Dog's Bollocks. But what I found out afterwards, I mean, Alan was very good friends with a very good friend of mine, so I used to buy my bait direct off Alan probably in like 91, 92, early 90s anyway. And I used to go and meet Alan and buy all the bait off him. And I was fishing Rodney Meadow at the time, which was on the Boyer group of lakes, and I on my first season on Rodney Meadow I caught really well. I think like the top rod had maybe had 24 fish and I'd had like 20, you know, with quite a few losses. I was certainly in the top three or four catches on there on like my first season, and really confident. I found out later that the base mixes that he was using were, I think they were the same as the Premier ones at the time. Because I think the guy that was doing it with him was, it was the Premier Baits guy. But it was quality bait anyway. This is my point, is it wasn't just something he knocked up himself. I think it was you know, a quality bait. And I caught really well, so well I was up there with the top rods. And then there was this one session. It had been a hot summer. I'd fished it all spring and all summer, and it had been a pretty warm summer. And then you know, you're like waiting for the break in the weather, like it's going to go off as soon as that low pressure comes and we get some heavy rain and stuff. And and it happened. I was the two sort of guys that got friendly with them, and were, you know, like, you know, the midweekers, the guys that you see every week, we're all kind of, you know, fishing together. There was no secrets between us anyway, and we were all catching plenty. And this weather had broke, we weren't on the fish, we went for a walk around the other side of the lake, and literally 6 foot off the bank, a decent mirror, like came up to its wrist, a real carpy nut out. And just as we were walking past this peg, when we'd basically gone for a scout to have a look for fish, and it was like, wow, you know, that straight away we're both excited, going, oh my god, did you see that? The fish are down here. So we've legged it back. In the meantime, John the Plumber, I think he was called, another guy that used to come and do the overnighters, he turned up. We were like, right, the fish are over there, over end of the lake. The three of us moved round. Nick, who was the first lad, he went in like the main peg where this fish had shown. It was fishing up to a snag. I went next door, and John went in the next peg. And it's like three of us in a line. All really, you know, like, I was in proper anticipation, excited, like, we're going to have it off tonight, you know, I'm definitely going to, we've found the fish. It was unusual what we'd seen. There were nutting everywhere, you know, when you just walk into a peg and the fish are all over it, and you're just like, you know, after not seeing them for a few days or whatever, and you're just like, right, I found them, you know, you're going to catch. Anyway, it was raining, so we didn't really socialise, if you know what I mean, that night. We both, you know, all sat in our own bivvies on our rods, waiting for takes. And I woke up the next morning, like 8 o'clock, without a single beep. And I was like, what's gone on? And what, you know, bleary eyed, walked down to them too. It was like, have you had any? And they'd had like five each. Like one either side of me. They'd been hauling all night. And I just slept all night. I hadn't had a single beep. I was like, hey, that's weird. Like, it completely amazed me. I was gobsmacked that I didn't catch. And I was like, I don't understand what's going on. Anyway, this happened about the next three sessions. I just couldn't get a bite. So I've rung Alan up. I'm like, what's going on? It got to the point where I was convinced it was the bait. This, bearing in mind, I had confidence in this bait. It, you know, I'd caught lots of fish on it all summer. And, you know, I rung him up and said, have you changed something in the bait? And then I started getting paranoid, thinking it was my eggs. My eggs must have gone up. And I went down the shop. I used to boil bait up on the bank sometimes there as well. You know, I used to like buy the mixes and roll it up myself. Yeah. And I went to the shop, made sure I got some fresh eggs. Went back, boiled a new load up the bank. Same thing. I never got another bite on those baits. Anyway, ended up changing onto the Grange it was at the time. Just started buying the mainline grains, the original one. Went back to catching again, and I fished all winter, and you know, had four or five fish during the winter, which was pretty good from there because it didn't fish that well in the winter. It was 100% the bait, but I'd caught loads on that bait all year. Anyway, years later, when you know, I had someone like Gary Bays that I could talk to and ask questions, I asked him, and he told me there's certain ingredients that don't work well in cooler water temperatures, and there was a definite change in the weather. It was like from when it had gone hot to, you know, the water had definitely cooled down a good few degrees. And he thinks there was, I forget what ingredients they are now, but there's certain ingredients that are common in baits that work in warmer water and not in cooler water. And he says it probably was the bait, but just it was the water temperature that had done it. And it's literally the only time I think I've ever thought that I should catch and didn't because of the bait. It didn't mean the bait was at fault, it just means that I didn't know any different. I'd picked the wrong bait for that temperature. And I remember telling him which bait it was as well, and he was aware of, I forget what it is, it's something like, is it red blood meal or something? One of them's like there's certain ingredients that don't work in different water temperatures.
Yeah, but I remember having this discussion when you was using was it Gary's own Fen mix on the car park?
Exactly, yeah.
Stopped even catching tenches, it got cooler, and then you switched, and well, obviously caught in the winter. You had one at the biggins in December.
Yeah, it was so, you know, it's about picking the right baits for the right times. We know that, you know, super heavy baits are not great in the winter. A lot of people go to the bird foods and get off the fish meals, don't they? But yeah, our general point that I've just told a story about was like generally you're still going to catch regardless of bait on them days that you should catch. I mean, I made my own bait back when I was young, like completely, you know, would get the semolina recipes out of books and try and roll up a cheap bait and just, you know, go and buy the Hutchie flavourings or whatever I could get my hands on. And some were better than others, without a doubt. But I always caught on all of them. Like, even, like, the semolina type mixes. I didn't catch as many. The semolina one was the worst one I ever tried, actually. I think I caught, like, on a lake where I used to get a lot of bites. I think I'd, like, the semolina got outfished 5-1 by the sort of the normal 50-50 Richworth mix that I used to use. With the same flavourings, everything was identical apart from one was the semolina soya flour base mix and the other one was the 50-50 Richworth mix, and it got outfished 5-1. But generally, you know, there's you're going to catch in all the companies, so yeah, you know, thank you for X-Bait Company for, you know, making my life great. It's probably not the case, and I don't know if I've ever, you know, made a post like that and referenced the bait as kind of the main reason for the success.
Yeah. Have you ever seen anyone make a post like that and think, oh, I must go and get that bait, he's caught that fish on it?
No, but
there's that many of them now. I just think it's not a very effective form of advertising.
I remember,
unless like, it's an exceptional catch.
Yeah. I remember pre-internet when, like, kind of the main source of news captures was Carp Talk, which was like the only weekly, yeah. And Carp Talk in the early days didn't have any articles or anything in it. It was literally all news, you know, like captures. And I was definitely influenced then. If I changed my bait based on what people were catching on in there many times, you know, if sometimes whole editions would just be, you know, 50% of it would be whatever the most popular bait at the time was. I'm trying to think of a few of them, but I mean, obviously the Grange, you know, it's probably one of the reasons why when I was looking for a change, when that mix wasn't working for me anymore on Rodney, you know, you go through there and if the first 10 pages of all the decent fish are all, you know, 80% of them have been caught in the Grange, I'm going to go out and buy the Grange, which is what I did. You know, I remember, was it Activate or Assassinate, one of the other mainline baits? It was just every fish in the country was getting caught on that bait. So naturally, that's going to influence you. You're going to want. And I keep an eye on lakes as well. If you see certain lakes, or used to then, you know, certainly if you know you're going to go and fish farlows or whatever, and you keep an eye on all the catch reports and you see that all the fish are coming out on X-bait, you're going to go and buy a load of that X-bait. So I think it does work. If you see a huge amount of catch reports being caught, you know, you see one bait that's kind of dominating a lot of waters, you'd be daft not to use it.
Yeah, mine is, you know, another angle to that situation is, you know, we're both, you know, sponsored anglers. We're going to fish a water, be it, you know, one-off or, you know, regular. And it's been turned over by, you know, say you're Nash, I'm with LA, and say we go to water that's been turned over with Sticky.
Yeah.
What do you do then? Do you stick with what you know, or...?
What I've done in that exact situation in the past is I've spoke to Gary and said, right, Sticky's krill and whatever is seems to be the main bait on that lake. What should I use? And Gary will go, this bait's very similar to that, or this bait, you know, that's a fish meal bait with fruity attractors. Here, use this fish meal bait with fruity attractors. And it's always done me fine, you know, that I just get, you know, because it's not, as great as any bait is, it's not unique. You know, if fish are getting caught on, you know, sweet flavour bird food mix, you know, Nash do a sweet flavour bird food mix. If they're getting caught on, you know, really fishy fish meal baits, then, you know, all companies have got a really fishy fish meal bait. So I'm just looking for types, that's all. But you'd be daft to ignore what's working.
Yeah. Do you know what my favourite in that situation is?
Yeah.
Single white pop-ups and search the fish.
Yeah, always. Always.
Yeah, that has worked for me almost even when the lake's iced up. White pop-ups done the do.
In session.
Morning, everyone. Day 4, about 9:30 in the morning. Didn't do anything yesterday, didn't do any blogs or anything. Any updates for you guys? Just enjoyed chilling out, to be honest. Started fishing yesterday probably about 2 o'clock and finished at about 9 p.m. So only fishing for 7 hours. The fish that came out yesterday, I had a 36.5 mirror, a 24-pound 8 mirror, and a 39.5 mirror carp, which was near on a lever, but it had a couple of scales on, so it didn't quite make the cut. The missus had an 18.6 mirror and a new personal best of 26.2. So fantastic day's fishing yesterday. Like I said, it's really, really chilled here. If you come in here with a family, it's just perfect. I'm probably only fishing probably about 55%, 60% of the time I'm actually here. Obviously, I've got a young family, so. But for you guys out there who are hardcore carp anglers, if you want to do a full sort of 3-day session and come back to the house, then I really think you can easily double them figures. Like I said before, they have started to spawn a little bit. But there's no signs of it yesterday at all. It was quite overcast, still warm, but there weren't as much activity on that front yesterday. But yeah, I can't rate the place highly enough, to be honest. The fish that are coming out are perfect. You know, they're all really good condition. They fight like they fight like absolute demons in there. It's just fantastic fishing. I'm not doing anything, you know, untoward. I'm literally using 5 kilo of bait with a throwing stick every single day on the same spot. Christoph, the bailiff, he goes out in the boat in the morning. He has to use the boat for insurance purposes, which is fair enough. But he goes out on the boat and he'll basically bait my spot for me in the morning. I usually don't fish for about 3 hours, let him come in and have a munch. Then I'll go down to the lake probably about 11. And then I will just put another kilo of boilie out with a throwing stick and then get my rigs out. Rig-wise, it's nothing untoward. It's just literally blowback style. Wafters, match the hatch, you know, nothing. When you're fishing this place, you don't need to use, you know, anything really, really technical. Multi-rigs have been working well for me as well. And keep the bait going in. They love the bait. As soon as you put bait in, within 10, 15 minutes, you'll get a couple of beeps. They are really on this bait now. That's 13 fish in total up to now. Maybe I should have had a few more, but I don't want to be greedy. But with the amount of fish out in the lake and obviously the activity when I'm baiting up, maybe I should have had a few more. But I'm just enjoying the, you know, the relaxation of it. Pulling three, four, five fish out a day, that I'm happy with that. So yeah, get yourself down here. The people here, even in local villages, you know, they all speak to you, they all make you feel welcome. You know, I was, the other day, night time, Christopher Bailiff asked me if I wanted to play petanque with him and his friends. So we went over to an old church, which is about 300 years old, just drinking red wine, overlooking the mountains, playing petanque. So, yeah, it's a fantastic place. I can't rate the place highly enough. The house itself is fantastic. It can sleep up to 10 to 12 people in here. I will do another blog towards the end and let you know what the final results are, but we're going to be going a day early. That's how good the fishing's been. We're supposed to be here till Saturday. We're actually calling it a day on Friday morning, because on the way back we're taking our little girl to Disneyland Paris for a couple of days, because the fishing's been that good and everyone's happy. So I'll speak to you soon.
In session.
I believe you spoke to Steve Briggs recently.
I had a wonderful chat with Steve Briggs, and you know, I think it has been commented after I spoke to Scott Lloyd that I'm actually getting a bit better at this interviewing thing, which has been a steep learning curve. And I'm going to say, Steve Briggs was a joy to speak to, so I hope you enjoy it all. Introduced to the Carpcast, Steve Briggs. You're doing well down there, Steve.
Yeah, I'm doing all right down there, mate.
Yeah. Good stuff. While I was at work and kept getting interrupted by customers, I just watched your latest video up on YouTube with that lake in Hungary. That looked like fun.
Well, it was a lovely place. It really was. And it wasn't somewhere I was looking forward to going, really, to start with. But once I got there, it was one of those days that, you know, I just really enjoyed the whole time there. And it was full of good fish and, yeah, managed to catch a few of them as well. So, pleased I went.
Yeah, it's quite... how fast, Hungary? Was it a drive or a flight over there?
Well, this one was a flight. I've driven... I drove out to a different lake last year, and I did it in one hit coming back, and it was 17 hours from the lake to actually getting in my bed. So wow. it's a fair old stint. Flying was a lot easier. I flew from Luton to Debrecen, it's called out there, which was 2.5 hours on the plane, and then it was 40 minutes to the lake. So, you know, that was a doddle. Yeah. Easy one.
Oh, luxury. And people say, you know, to me when I'm up here just travelling 100 miles down the A1, oh, that's a fair way. No, it's not. No, but, you know, there's one fish I've got to ask you about, Steve. It's one, you know, I can picture it in my mind right now. I'm sure it's a memorable one for you. I believe it was your first 40. It was a big, like, linear, dark-looking fish. Was it a classic for the year as well?
That's right, God, yeah, you do. Just brought the memories flooding back, actually. It was a good story because the carp, classic carp of the year had just started up the year before, and I was fishing a lake called Summerlees at the time, and I was fishing with Ian Russell. He was one of the members on there.
Yeah.
And there was a beautiful fish in there called the Fully Scaled, and Ian said, you know, if it'll catch that one, that's going to win Classic Carp of the Year. Sure enough, he caught it. Yeah. And he won Classic Carp of the Year. And I said to him, well, I know one up the road, you know, in Cape Boards it was.
Yeah.
If I can catch that linear, I'm sure that's going to win. And the following year I caught it, and sure enough, it did win. And it was my first English 40.
Yeah. How long ago was that now? That's when 40s weren't exactly growing on trees like they seem to be today. That was...
Blimey. Well, it's going back a bit. I remember it was 1997. So it's actually 19 years ago. It'd be 20 years ago next year. Blimey. That's frightening.
Wow, you know what? I can answer. I can fix. I've got, don't ask me to go to the shop for three things and remember all of them, but I can remember just images of fish in my head.
Yeah, that's right, isn't it? Yeah, it's funny that.
Yeah.
No. So, Yeah, that was a beauty, that one. It was a special fish. There's not many old leanies still around, you know, and everyone loves the old leany mirrors. They just do. And that was a very special one, you know, very few of them over 40 pounds. So that was one, and I'll never forget that one, especially being, you know, first UK 40.
Yeah, I mean, I know, you know, a lot of people know you for your, you know, foreign exploits, which, you know, I'll ask you about shortly, but you've caught some of the best British fish down there as well. I mean, even from the likes of, you know, Raisbury.
The trouble is, there's just not enough time in the world to do everything.
So true.
But, yeah, I mean, I need two or three lifetimes, we all do, to do all the fishing that I want to do. I sort of get dragged down the route of going away, just business-wise, and, you know, when people ask me to do articles, it's always on foreign fishing, so I get dragged that way. But I love the UK fishing, and, I've been fortunate to fish some fantastic lakes over the years, you know, Harefield in its heyday, the Darrent Valley in its heyday, you know, and Raisbury, like you say, Raisbury is fantastic and very kind to me as well.
Yeah, I remember seeing pictures of you with the cluster. Yeah, it was about 43 pounds, is my memory correct?
Yeah, 44.7 it was. It was a UK, pretty close.
Yeah.
And, you know, I joined Raisbury, or I applied to join Raisbury with the intention of Mary, you know, that was trying to get a UK 50. And literally, the day the permit dropped through my letterbox was the day Mary was found dead. And, you know, and I sort of undenied whether to actually go and fish Raisbury at all. And I did, you know, and I caught cluster on my second night there, so I was very fortunate. But cluster was actually the biggest, after Mary had gone, cluster was the biggest fish in the lake.
Yeah, well, that's the way to do it, to in and out, second night.
Yeah, well, I worked very hard in those 2 days.
Oh,
But, yeah, I was very fortunate, obviously. I was expecting a long haul, and, I was in and out quick, like you say.
Yeah. Now, there's another one that we spoke about earlier. I've got to ask, it's possibly one of the best carp that this country's produced. What was your first impressions of the Mia and the Black Mirror? Because that is a challenge and a half.
Well, my first impressions go right back to 1990, because that was when I started walking around it.
Yeah.
And at the time, I'd heard about this big mirror that was in this lake, but no one would, no one would actually say where the lake was. They was keeping it under wraps. And by chance, I did a bit of work with someone, and they said, you know, I know where that lake is. I'll take you up there. You know, it's total fluke. But we went up there, but it was another 15 years before I actually got round to fishing it. It was more than a challenge that I wanted to take on in those years. You know, I knew it was there, but there was other things that were just more attainable, I suppose. And in the end, I just thought to myself, I've got to go and fish the mirror. I've got to go and do it. And that was in 2005. And, it was just the hardest thing I've ever done in my life.
Yeah, so I'm assuming in all that time in between, you're following the progress of the Black Mirror and, you know, the couple of other fish and reading the stories about the place.
It was, it just had such an aura about the place. It wasn't just about that fish, although obviously that fish was the main thing that attracted everyone. Everyone knew the Black Mirror, whether or not they knew where it lived or anything like that. But the lake itself had a real special aura about it, like nowhere else I've ever fished, actually. It was, it did spoil me fishing there, because I've never found another lake like it, and, you know, and I keep looking for one, and it's probably not out there, but it was, a very, very special place.
Yeah, definitely. So we know the Black Mirror. You know, what other fish, were in there as targets? Was the, I do seem to remember Dave Mallin with this real long linear. Is that still around when you were on there?
No, no one actually knew what happened to the linear. There were stories that the lake flooded and it got into one of the other lakes. But basically, no one's ever seen it again. And yeah. It sort of disappeared before I started fishing there. So, yeah, a bit of a mystery. Yeah, but it's certainly not in the near now. There were so many good anglers, and we were seeing fish all the time. You know, we saw the fish in there, and it just wasn't in there anymore. So a mystery, that one.
Yeah, I know there's also, was there a big uncaught common? That's an old cliche, I know, but I believe there was one there. Did you see that one?
Well, yes, I did, actually. And it's funny, you know, because some people talked about this big common that was in there, and there was very sort of highly respected anglers that were fishing the lake that were convinced that it wasn't in there because they hadn't seen it. And, you know, I spoke to people that said, no, if it was here, I would have seen it. Well, you know, I did see it, and I saw it 3 or 4 times. It was always in the same little area. It always used to seem to live in one area. But, yeah, I did see it. It was certainly over 50 pounds as well. It was a big common, and it rarely got seen, and it never got caught.
Wow, so we've got, the Black Mirror, an uncut 40-pound common. This really is the Lake of Dreams. But, man, what was the state of the, permission to fish? Because, you know, just for the listeners who, don't know about Colmy, was it an SSSI, a nature reserve? There was no fishing officially allowed?
Yeah, I mean, at one time there was fishing allowed on there, and it was going to become a landfill site, and the anglers that were on there at the time did what they did to save the lake and save the fish, and they brought it to the attention of the nature groups around the area, you know, what rare wildlife was living on there, and once they brought it to their attention, they got it made a SSSI site. Which meant there was no fishing allowed on it anymore. So they saved the lake and the fish, but they ruined the fishing. So all of the fishing that we did after that had to be done very stealthily, let's say that. You know, it had to be done undercover and out of sight.
So what sort of things were you doing to avoid the prying eyes? Was it on and off the lake in the hours of darkness? And what about the vehicles as well? Was there somewhere to hide those?
Well, I used to park behind an Indian restaurant. You know, there was a famous lay-by, but it was so obvious to park in there.
Yeah.
So I used to park a fair distance away behind an Indian restaurant and just walk back. You know, it's quite a distance to walk. So I used to stash a lot of my gear actually at the lake undercover because it was so overgrown. I could actually stash bed chair and sleeping bag and everything at the lake. So I just used to sneak in and out with the minimum of gear. To start off with, I used to just fish out overnighters and get off early. But in the end, I used to make little hideaways and used to what I used to do was wade out into the lake, wade along the margins, and then get in under bushes so that you couldn't be seen from anywhere. And yeah, I'd have little various bits around the lake like that. So it was, very stealthy fishing, but always done out of sight and out of mind.
Yeah, that sounds like the best way. That's got to have been so exciting as well. And could you, was there many, I've never walked around the place. Was there footpaths around it? Was there, the general, like people traffic, dog walkers and bird watchers and the like?
Well, you used to get a certain amount of bird watchers around there, more in the winter than anything else. You know, there were a lot of birds used to come in and overwinter on the lake. So that was when you got the main bulk of the bird watchers. But otherwise, the paths were just kept open by the anglers themselves. Otherwise, it would have completely just, gone back into a jungle, basically, because most of it was a jungle. And it was only the anglers that made any sort of paths around it.
Well, it's not too bad then. So if someone else did come across you, it was likely to be another angler who was doing the same anyway.
Most of the time, yeah. I mean, I had a couple of close shaves. I remember being in this little hidey hole, and I saw these two guys in black shirts walking along down the bank. And I thought, well, they're not anglers. Do you know what I mean? And it looked a bit ominous. And eventually they came around to where I was, and they were standing about literally 8 feet from where I was sitting by my rods. And I could hear him saying, oh, look, you can see someone's been fishing here, all the gravel's been cleaned off, and that was where I'd waded out in front to get in where I was. And I was literally sitting there, quiet as a mouse, I'm thinking, oh, please don't get a run now. And they just chatted for a little while and then wandered off. There was a couple of close shaves, that was one of them, but otherwise, yeah, mostly if someone was walking around, it was an angler, really.
Wow, I love stories like that about, I bet your heart was beating through your chest when you just sat there listening to him talking feet from you.
Didn't want to breathe.
Yeah, I certainly didn't want to run, not at that moment anyway.
No, definitely not.
Yeah. Right, what about, I believe you did quite a stretch of time before you actually contacted your first fish on the Mere, is that right?
Yeah, well, it was fairly early on when I hooked my first one, but I lost that. I actually it broke the hook length, and at the time, you know, I mean, I thought, well, I feel like I've sussed something out. I know what I'm doing. But the Mere had a funny way of throwing things in your face, you know, like you'd find a little spot that was all clear and the bait was going. And then you come back two days later, and the water would go green, you know, it'd be an algae bloom. Something could always throw a spanner in the works. And it was ages and ages before I got another chance. It was actually 63 nights before I got my first fish, you know, which was sort of 2 years later. So, you know, it was a lot of time and effort went into getting my first one.
Wow, 63 nights fishing, you know, those clandestine methods, it's got to take its toll. Is there any point where you just thought, you know, is it too much of a challenge or is it worth it? But, you know, obviously you carried on.
It sort of worked the other way, really. The more I did it, the more determined I became. You know, because like you say, it was very hard. It wasn't like you could just bivvy up and bank and do like a week session or something like that every night. Was a bit fraught with danger, and you had to fish undercover and fish quietly, and you know, and all that. So it was quite tense, sort of stressful fishing anyway. But the more I did it, the more determined I got, basically, and the more into it I got over time. So yeah, it built up gradually.
Yeah, that's something I can certainly relate to. I'm kind of glad that I'd never started fishing the Mere, because that would have just it would have led to divorce. I would have dropped everything to just do it. So let's say the aura of the place. No, but, now, so when you finally caught one of these, you know, as Mere fish, tell us about that one, because that's got to have been a magical moment.
Well, the first one, there was a couple of people walking around the previous day, and I didn't know who they were, so I thought, well, I better not hang around really on the lake, so I packed all my gear away. And literally, I was just walking out of the lake. The last day I come to, I could see a fish feeding down there, and it was on the spot I'd baited up. And there was this fish, you know, feeding on bait. So I came back later that night, and I was so sure. I mean, this was after 2 years of catching nothing, but I was so sure I was going to catch one that night. I actually got into a sleeping bag with my chest waders on. And sure enough, 4:15 in the morning, off it went. And I just jumped straight in the lake with a rod and got it. And it was only, 20-pound 8 common, but it was, at that time, it was the best fish I've ever caught. You know, it's worth its weight in gold.
Oh, I can totally imagine. I had a similar experience on, a big pit up near me. It's it was ridiculously low stocked for back then, and my first fish after I think it was about 20 odd nights, it was only a 13 pound common, but the swim I was in, used to call it Housing Estate Point, because there's like a little dirt track and behind it is houses, and it was about 10 o'clock in the morning. I let out some profanities, and you know, this woman looked over a fence, she's out hanging a washing out, and I'm just caught a 30 pound common swearing me off.
Well, I bet that made her day. She wondered what the hell was going on.
Yeah, she didn't phone the police, so she must have just thought, oh, there's another fisherman, we're an idiot.
Yeah, it's funny, we live in our own little world, don't we? You know, and like, if you're a footballer or anything like that, people know what you do, but if you're a carpenter, even your next door neighbour, they don't understand what you do. It's our own little world, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I used to live next door to a match angler, and he didn't get it. So
no, people don't, do they?
No, there's plenty of piss taken over the fence. You know, so I'm gonna have to catch some real carp. You go to the overstock puddle. But that was a lovely fella, Andy. He was. Well, I'm sure he still is. But yeah, so you've got your first Mia Fish under your belt. So that's got to boost confidence now. When were you? Was the next one long coming, or?
Well, yeah, not so long after that. It was funny. It's like, you know, it's climbing the mountain. You know, once you've done it and achieved something, you sort of know what you're doing, and the first one is always the hardest one to get.
Yeah.
And what I started to find on the Mia was that there were little tiny windows of opportunity. And in the first couple of years, I just didn't know what I was looking for. I didn't recognise what those little windows of opportunity were. And after, you know, catching that fish, I sort of knew more what I was looking for, and gradually that was what made the difference. I mean, there's a lot of times when they wouldn't eat any bait at all, and there was rare times when they would eat a bit of bait, and there was, like, there might be a morning or a couple of hours every 3 or 4 weeks where there was a fish was catchable. Yeah. And one, it was being there, and the other thing was recognising when that opportunity was there, and that was what I started to get in tune with. You know, looking back, I probably missed loads of chances early on that I just didn't know there was a chance there to be had. So that was definitely what started to make the difference, and I did start to get a couple more fish.
Oh, great stuff. Were they, did they get bigger than 20 pounds, or they just, you know, what was the, apart from, you know, we've mentioned the Black Mirror and, you know, the Suncoat Common, what was the overall stock of the lake? Was it really known, or?
Yeah, there was about 20 fish in there in all. We got it down to about 20, 21 fish, something like that. Mainly commons. There was, only three mirrors in the lake. There was the Black Mirror. There was another, we used to call it the 30 mirror, which I used to see a lot. I used to see that fish a lot. And I saw one little scaly mirror, about 15 pound. I only ever saw it once, but I saw it clearly. So they were the three mirrors. Everything else was commons of various sizes. You know, there was a few decent ones. There was three or four around the 40 pound up to 43, 44-ish. Some were caught, some were uncaught. Do you know what I mean? And that big common as well. But it was about 20, 21 fish.
Yeah, well, I mean, it always baffles me because, you know, a big common, a 50-pound common, it's got to eat. You know, is it just pure natural feeder and just ignores bait? Because, you know, it's fascinating.
Well, the first time I saw it was about September time, and there was always algae blooms on the lake, and it was quite green, but I could see these fish clear enough, and, you know, I could see this common, it was right underneath me. So I went and got a rod with a little pop-up on, and I had the pop-up in this little hole where the fish was. So it was by its nose for about an hour, this pop-up, and the fish, you know, never took a blind bit of notice. It was like it didn't recognise what it was, had no interest in it whatsoever. But after it had sat there for about an hour, it started to move off, and as it moved off, you know, when you get really thick algae blooms, you get like crusty bits on the surface, and they sort of whitey, bluey, sort of, you know, almost looks like bits of foam or polystyrene sometimes on the top.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And as the fish, as it went to swim off, it actually come up and took a lump of the algae with it, and I could see it chomping on that as it went off. I've never seen that happen before or since. But it was eating a bit of this crusty old algae off the top. So, you know, it lived on something that, well, I've never, like I said, I've never seen a fish even attempt to eat that before. So, I don't know. Yeah, maybe it lived on that.
Yeah,
it was a strange one.
God, honestly, that's a completely new one on me. I've fished a few lakes that have turned into pea soup, and, you know, apart from they just, I think they look awful. I don't like it, but, you know, it's part of nature. But I've never seen fish eating, you know, the old algae crust.
No. I mean, it certainly, it never showed any interest in any bait. You know, I know Dave Lane see what I'm sure was the same fish a few times. He tried with all sorts of baits, naturals and snails in front of it, and it just never got close to catching it. But it had that mouthful of algae off the top. And that was the only thing I ever saw it eat.
Well, I can't think of an effective way of presenting algae.
Yeah, I mean, it's the thing was, whenever it went green and all that, you know, the fish, people stopped fishing there because the fish just switched off. That's what we thought. Or perhaps it was like a case of a natural food bloom, you know, when they switched off because they had another food source, perhaps. I don't know. It was a strange one anyway.
Yeah, it's... I think we might have to get Simon Scott back on as a guest and ask him about algae blooms and their nutrition value for fish. Yeah, that's got me. That's certainly got me thinking. But anyway, back on to
spirulina or whatever. You know, that's it's a major sort of ingredient in koi foods and whatever these days. And of course, that's where you know what it is, isn't it? It's where it comes from. So
yeah,
maybe there's something in it. I don't know how you'd actually use it as a bait, but. You know, if my hook had been in that lump of crusty old blue-green algae that day, I might have caught that uncaught 50-pound common. Yeah.
And another classic carp winner. But, but no, so... I know we had, 63 nights for a fish, and then... let's fast forward. Let's get back to the juicy bits onto the juicy black mirror, you know... Yeah, were you feeling close to it when the time came? Was it just writing on the wall or out of the blue?
It was. I was getting really in tune with the fish. I mean, there was quite a few other really good anglers fishing there at the time, and it just got to that stage where I was more in tune with the lake than everyone else. I knew where the black mirror was and I was seeing it regularly. You know, the first couple of years, I hardly saw it at all. And people, you know, used to tell me they never saw it. Well, all of a sudden, I would just turn up and I'd find it. I'd see it because I knew where it was going to be. I knew what it was doing.
Yeah.
And I'd narrowed it down to one little area. You know, I'd seen it with 8 fish one time and I'd caught one that night and it was a 30-pound common. Next time there was just 3 fish and a black mirror was one of them. And again, I caught one of the commons, which was an old original. So, you know, I was getting closer all the time and I was finding the mirror all the time. And eventually I caught it from the same spot where I'd just caught these 2 commons from. And it was coming in and feeding on this spot. And when I got this spot, I turned up to fish for a couple of days. First thing to do was check the baited areas. I looked in on the spot and there was a common there feeding on the bait. Yeah. And I thought, wow, brilliant. You know, I mean, to catch any fish out of the mirror was brilliant. So first thing I did was drop all the gear, set up a rod, looked down. The fish had just moved off, so I lowered the bait in position, stepped back, and I thought, right, well, that'll do me for tonight. You know, I've got somewhere I know there's fish around. I thought, well, I'll send Joan a text to let her know that I've seen a fish on the spot. Step back. Literally with that, the alarm sounded. I mean, the bait had been in the water a minute, no more than a minute. I'd only just been there 5 minutes and it just screamed off. It was just the right place at the right time. And of course, I thought it was this common that I'd seen in there. So, you know, I jumped in the lake like you do with the rod and all that, thinking I'm playing this common. And it was only actually after all the battle when it came up over the drawstring and I saw that tail with the flat lobe. And I thought, bloody hell, it's a mirror. And I thought, God, you know, well, there's only one that can be, and well, I just went in a meltdown. You know, I can't even remember what happened after that. It was just like a blur. You know, 5 years of all that hard work, and there it was. You know, no words can describe how I felt at that moment because it was like everything I'd worked for and dreamed of and hoped for, and there it was. I'd got it. You know, it was such a mind-blowing moment, you know, that I'll probably never experience again in fishing.
No, it is pretty much like, well, it was the Everest of carp fishing, no doubt. So, although it's irrelevant, what was the weight?
It was 51.12.
Yeah, and total well done, Steve. Well done for anyone who catches that fish and goes through the trauma to get it. And that's it.
Well, it was certainly my Everest. Do you know what I mean? I don't think I can ever beat that feeling or beat what I did. You know, it was just such hard work physically and mentally, and just blown away when I got it. I really was.
Yeah, so, when it's in the net, I know there's a few waters I fish with big fishy. When, a fish is there waiting for the pictures, it's customary to, give out the shout. Was it the same on the Mere with the, this undercover operations
yeah,
coming
I was
off?
Jumping up and down and, I mean, there was no one there to hear me. That was, I was jumping up and down and shouting. The thing was that it was, the World Cup was on and England were playing that afternoon, so... so there's no one on the lake, and there was hardly anyone anywhere. You know, everyone was at home watching England playing the World Cup. So
the perfect time. Yeah, for a bit of meat fishing.
I was shouting all on my own.
Did England win as well?
Do you know what? I can't even remember.
It's not important. The Black Mirror was.
That was the least of my worries.
Yeah, I can imagine. But, the only sad thing, I believe it was the last time the Black Mirror ever was caught, wasn't it?
It was actually the last take of any sort on the lake. Because normally what happened, if the Black Mirror came out, people stopped fishing there because it was the main target. And a few people carried on. It was more or less 2 months to the day afterwards that all of the fish suddenly died overnight. And so, actually, that was the last run ever on the lake with those fish. So, talk about cutting it fine. I couldn't have left it any later. I'm just fortunate that I fished it when I did.
Yeah, and this is what I've just read and heard. Was it just an oxygen crash following an algae bloom that did it? I've heard there was like even snails died. Everything went.
I got the phone call and went down there that day. And sure enough, the day before it was all bright green and pea soup. And went down there and the water was like tap water. All of the green had gone. And there was all the snails floating on top, millions of little baby perch, huge tench, huge eels. We didn't even know eels were in there. And there was... these eels floating around, they were massive things. God knows, the biggest eels I've ever seen. I've never seen anything like it. And there they were all floating around, pike and, of course, all the carp as well. It was, very sad, it was. And the last, I was walking along looking at, someone had already found the mirror and taken it out and buried it. But I walked along the bank and I was looking at this common laying in the edge. And it was the common that I'd seen feeding on my baits the day that I lowered the bait in and caught the Black Mirror. And there it was laying in front of me, this common. It was one of the old twisty common, one of the originals. And, when I saw that, I didn't want to see anymore. So I just turned around and walked off and went home. I thought, I didn't want to see anymore. That was enough. It was horrible, really.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's... it was a couple of years after I actually found the twin dead on Elstow, and that was, even though it was just one fish, but I spent that much time, it was my obsession for a while. Did anyone ever find the big uncaught common?
Not that I know of, no. From what I can make out, the EA came down, a day or two later, and took all the fish away, everything. So they just literally netted what was there and never really sort of said what was there, what they got, They just took them away. They come down, netted them and took them away. So that, there was, that included like all the pike and the tench and the carp. Yeah. So, presumably it was amongst all those. But, who knows? It'd be nice to think it's still in there somewhere, but it's not, I doubt it.
Yeah, so the last thing on the mere, I'm assuming now it's just a lake that's gone back to nature, just totally overgrown, like you mentioned the pass where there's no carp anglers to keep the pass free. Has anybody dropped anything in on the sly, or is it just gone?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been a few dropped in there, but I have walked around it a few times more recently, a couple of times, and it has virtually gone back to nature. You know, it is, it's almost impossible to walk around because it was funny because a couple of weeks, or even might have been the next time I went down after catching the mirror, and I thought, I've got to go back and just have a look at the spot and relive it. Yeah. And I went back there, and there was a tree had fallen right in on the spot. And that was so typical of the Mia that I'd just beaten it to it. You know, normally you'd find a spot that's going, and then the tree would fall in and ruin it all. And there was so much greenery and trees and bushes that it was constantly growing over everything. And yeah, last time I went down there, it was just a jungle, absolute jungle.
Yeah. Yeah, wow, man, that's... that's some chapter in carp fishing history, the mere, and I must have read, just for inspiration at times, the chapter on it in Terry Hearn's book, you know, loads of times, you know, especially when I'm thinking carp eating bait. And
yeah, I mean, I've probably read that chapter 25 times, especially when I started fishing down there, and in the end, I had to stop reading it because what I was... reading it through Terry's eyes, if you want. I was seeing the mirror through Terry's eyes and not my own. I had to stop reading it and do my own thing on there. And, it actually did me a bit of good. But it's one of my favourite chapters of all time. You know, Terry's chapter on the mirror is a brilliant bit of writing.
Yeah, I think I put it up there with, possibly one of the best chapters in any carp book. You know, it's certainly joint first.
Yeah, there's two that stand out for me. One is Rod Hutchinson's, it's from Carp Now and Then, and it was Return to Cassian when he went with Roger Smith. That was one of my favourites, and Terry's chapter on the mirror is the other one. They're the two standout chapters for me of all time.
Yeah, I've not read the Rod Hutchinson one, but I'm certainly going to look it up now. You mentioned Cassian. Yeah, go on.
Well, I mean, it sums up... I mean, when we first went to Cassian, I mean, it's actually 30 years this year since I first went to Cassian.
Yeah.
And Rod Hutchinson's chapter sort of sums up how it was going abroad in those days, because now everyone just goes on a French trip. You know, they book it up and they go to France for a jolly up with the lads. Well, 30 years ago, you know, that wasn't in existence. There was no commercial waters, and it was just a huge adventure. And I'd only been driving 6 months or something when I first went, and it was, you know, just a massive adventure, and you can't explain what it was like now, because it was a lot different back then. But mind-blowing.
Imagine 6 months of driving, and then you're down to the south of France fishing on late service.
I'm going to dreams for me now, after the
Ellis fish,
that famous
fish. Well, it was actually the same year. It was June 1986 when he caught that fish, and it was September the same year when I first went. And that was one of the big inspirations for me to go there, seeing that picture of him with that fish. I just, you know, there's people at the time saying, that's not real, you know, that's not a carp, that's a freak. And I was just thinking, God, I want one of them. Yeah. You know, I fancy some of that.
Yeah, so what was it like that, first time you clapped eyes on the lake? You know, obviously it got to have been, you know, massively bigger than anywhere you've fished before.
Yeah, I was sort of prepared for the size because I knew how big it was and I knew how deep it was. What I wasn't prepared for was just the impact of the whole atmosphere and everything around me that the lake would have on me. Because I've just been used to fishing like in the Barents Valley on little muddy lakes with, you know, rats running around and people set up 10 foot away from you. And all of a sudden it was on this lovely big expanse of water set up on a little sandy beach with no one for miles either side of you. great big fish, and it was just everything I'd ever dreamed of. You know, it was just like a dream come true. It was like being out on a desert island somewhere, you know, but there was great big carp out there to catch. It really was. It wasn't just the big fish. It was just the whole package, the whole atmosphere and everything, the weather, the scenery,
yeah.
You know, the clear water, the whole thing. It was, yeah, mind-blowing it was.
Yeah. What was your tackle like they had back then? Was it, were you undergunned for Cassine or were you prepared?
Yeah, just no, not at all. Yeah, I mean, I was struggling to make ends meet anyway in those days. My rods were my first carbon rods that I ever had. I made them myself, Sportex blanks, and built them myself. And they were 11 foot 1 3/4.
That's intentional.
I was going to say, they'd be light sort of barbell rods now. Yeah. But yeah, they were my carp rods because that was all I had, and I was only fishing little lakes, and that was what I went to Cassian with. And yet, they sort of did the job. So, I mean, I was so undergunned on everything in those days. I really was. But, you know, I just went with what I had. That was all I had, and I just had to go there. So that was how it went.
Yeah, was there a few of you who went go down, or was it a solo trip?
The first trip was with my girlfriend at the time. She loved the idea of the south of France. And, you know, so that was an easy one, that was.
Yeah.
So we just jaunted off down there for 2 weeks. Yeah, it was just me and her at the time. There was a couple of other people around the lake, English people. Phil Smith was there with Joe Taylor. They were,
yeah,
you know, quite famous Cassian anglers in those days, but there weren't many people on there. The second week after they'd gone home, there was only me and there were three Germans fishing about a mile away in the West Arm. We were the only ones on the lake. You know, it was paradise. It really was.
Yeah, I can imagine. And, did he catch that first trip?
Yeah, I caught my first Cassian carp on my first night. I was expecting to really struggle to get a fish, and I'd literally cast three rods out in the evening. I had to take on all three rods.
Yeah.
I missed one take, lost one, and then I had a 22-pound mirror on the first night, so I was a bit shocked by that. I think I caught 9 fish on that first trip, and I caught my first 40-pounder at 43-pound. So, and that was, I mean, I only took Avon scales with me, you know, 32-pound Avon scales. That was how confident I was that I was going to catch a big one. So I was a bit blown away, yeah, catching a 40-pounder. But, yeah.
Yeah, I remember.
Sorry.
Yeah, I had a set of those Avon scales, and well, the first time I caught a 32, it was so exciting. But, yeah, I could imagine what it was like when you... You know, it's like, it justifies the mission, so to speak. It's, I said mission accomplished, but you kept going back for more. You've been going back for, ever since.
Well, I went with the intention of just going there to say that I've been there. You know, like I thought, well, I'll go there once, say that I've been there, experience it, and sort of move on. But yeah, I literally fell in love with the place. And I mean, that was 30 years ago. And in all that time since, I think I've only missed 2 years out in all that time. You know, every other year I've been there, either summer trips or, you know, Christmas trips. And it's still the best place I've ever been to. I've never found a better lake. I've never found a better place. And it's the only place where it doesn't matter how long I've been there for, it's never long enough. I never want to pack up and leave.
Yeah, that is a sign of, somewhere where you've clicked with, you know, it's you're a little bit of paradise. You know, you do have sessions where, you know, for me, it's, you know, 3 nights, I start stinking and I'm ready for home. But, yeah, that's it. You know.
Yeah, with Cassian, it was different. Yeah, I mean, you know, most places, like, you know, anywhere where I've been, you do your week or your 2 weeks and you sort of pack up and go home and you think, oh, well, that was nice. with Cassie, and you know, you sit there and you're thinking, well, there was one time, me and Joan, we actually stayed 7 weeks. We were due to be there 3 weeks, I think, and we got to the end of 3 weeks, and we sort of said, well, we haven't actually got to go home, you know, there's no jobs lined up, we'll stay another week. And it got to the end of that week, and you know, we ended up staying there 7 weeks, and it was still a wrench to leave after that.
Yeah, I can imagine a 7 week session. I don't think I've ever fished a 7 day. But what about some? You're gonna have some memorable captures over the years. What about the the early days? You know, when you're going back down in. Because I can't imagine transport being too reliable back then either.
Well, I mean, the second trip, I'd actually, after that first trip where I went in an old Mark III Cortina, I'd actually lost my licence soon after that, being a naughty boy. Yeah. And I was desperate to go back. And the guy that I was fishing with at Darrenp with, Peter Noonan, I somehow convinced him that we needed to go to Cassian. And he had this little minivan. I mean, you know, I can't even imagine trying to get all that gear. We just didn't have much gear in those days, I suppose. And we fitted it all in this little minivan. And he thought it was the nuts, this minivan. And I tell you what, it absolutely felt a bit. It was a nightmare. I told him to get loads of spares, you know, get a spare fan belt, it won't matter, a few little spares of this, that and the other. Well, he got nothing, basically. And the fan belt snapped before we got to Paris. So, you know, that was our first trip to a garage. And, well, it was the first of many. It just went on and on and on. We kept overheating. And the top snapped off his radiator where he was trying to put some fresh water in the radiator, and the cap actually snapped off. The exhaust pipe, there was something wrong with the engine. It started jumping around all over the place after a while, and it actually ripped the exhaust pipe off its brackets, and the exhaust pipe went through the petrol tank.
Oh my
and,
God.
You know, it just went on, and we just shoved a rod bag or something, plugged the hole up in the. It was disastrous, really, and it actually took us 5 days to get home. Wow. I mean, we just kept stopping and breaking down. There was all sorts of things falling off it. But it was actually a great trip. You know, I mean, I caught on that trip, I caught a 61-pound mirror, and Pete caught a 54-pound mirror. And, you know, it was all worth it. It didn't matter what went wrong or what happened. It was all worth it because we had those fish. Thankfully, we caught those fish. But I mean, back in though, it was 1987. They were monsters then, absolute monsters.
Yeah, I mean, I tell you, a fish like that's a monster to me nowadays. Even after I've been, chasing them for most of my life. What's that? What other memorable captures have you had down there then? You know, there's got to be some that that stand out for one reason or another.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many over the years, you know. I mean, there's fantastic sort of Christmas Day captures and things like that. I mean, there was one. I always wanted a big common out of Cassian, like a 50 or a 55-pound common. And that actually, it took me 25 years to catch one of those. And when I did, I caught two in a week. I caught a 55 and a 56 in the same week.
Like buses.
But many of the... Yeah, it was just like, oh, yeah, I can believe it. But, you know, it's sod's law, isn't it? It happens like that. But many of the better trips really came sort of later on towards the end. And my actual last winter trip on there, before they stopped the night fishing in 2013, and in the winter of 2012, it was another hard trip. They were always hard trips. You know, I never knew where the fish would be, so it was a case of moving around, and I think I'd had one fish in 10 days, moved to the North Arm, and just dropped on a group of big fish. And in the space of a week, I had, I think it was four 50s and two 60s. And the two biggest fish I'd ever caught out there, I had a 63.5 common and a 64.5 pound mirror. And they were virtually the last two fish I caught on that trip. And I thought, blimey, what's going on here? And we got home, and about a month later, they stopped all the night fishing. And it was almost like the lake was give me a bit of a send-off for the winter trips. You know, it was all those years of struggling, and then, you know, the two biggest fish I ever caught were those last two fish on those on that winter trip. Amazing, really.
Wow, bit of a, well, like a fairy tale sort of thing. So, you know, just for, well, you know, myself and the listeners, what are the rules and restrictions on casting now compared to what they used to be then when we, you know, you could night fish?
Well, it's sort of, they've come and gone over the years. I mean, originally when we went there was no night fishing, but we used to just get away with it, if you like, if you was careful.
Yeah.
But then in 1994, they brought in night fishing all the year round, so you could fish the whole lake night fish all year round. And then in 2000, they stopped you fishing during the night in the summer. So June, July and August, you couldn't night fish. And then in 2013, they stopped night fishing completely on the lake. So now, the way it stands now, is that you can only be on the lake 1 hour before sunrise until 1 hour after sunset. And you have to check up on the times as well, the official sunset time, because it's not just a matter of watching the sun go down over the hills. There is official sunset times in the region, and believe me, they're so strict on it. You know, they catch a lot of people out, because as soon as that time's up, that's when they come down and check. And if you're there, they take your rods, you get fined, and like I say, they're very strict about it. So the winter trips, you know, sort of out of the question really now, but summer trips are still great. You know, we go down there and fish the bays, and you know, it's good fun. I still love it.
Yeah, so you've been back since then in the summer, just doing days only. Because I've got to be honest, having, you know, never fished in France, you know, which I'm sure I will sooner or later, it's, you know, Cassine is, it's probably the one where I'll go. You know, I know there's lots of commercial options, but I've never been one to make things easy for myself. And, you know, just having, you know, read so much about the place, and like you say, just I want to sample that aura. Even if I just go down and catch 120, it's, you know, fish casino. So is there like campsites nearby where you can use as a base?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's literally half a mile up the road, the campsite, and it's only €22 a night, so, you know, about £18 a night or something. And to be honest, when they stopped the night fishing totally, we said to ourselves, that'll do, we'll stop fishing the lake. You know, it's not going to be the same. But it didn't take long before we was looking at the pictures, and we both said, me and Joan, you know, we've got to go back. You know, it was drawing us back all the time. So we went back last summer, stayed on the campsite, went down, fished the days, and absolutely loved it. Very chilled out fishing, still caught a few, and, you know, like I say, absolutely loved it. It was fantastic.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. Now, there's one thing that's always fascinated me with, what I've read about, you know, Cassine, and, you know, oh, it's no comparison to the English fishing, but some of the depths that you catch them from.
Yeah, well, the main thing with Cassian has always been the depths. And it's one of the things, well, it's taught me more about depths and thermoclines and where the fish are happy, more than any other water I've ever been to. And the thing with Cassian is, if people come round to talk to you and they talk about fish you've caught or whatever, they never ask about rigs, they never ask about bait. All they'll ask is how deep you caught it from, because yeah, that's the determining factor. That's what it's all about. You know, one thing, it's getting on the fish, because they're very nomadic, the fish, but the main thing then is fishing at the right depth. That's what it's all about. So yeah, Cassian has taught me so much about depths over the years, and you know, there's rules to go by. When the water's very high, the fish will come shallower. And when the water level's down, because the water level fluctuates all the time and throughout the year, when the water level's low, the fish will go deeper. And also, you know, temperatures make a lot of difference.
Yeah.
Like in England, we're so used to fish coming up to the surface when it warms up.
Yeah.
Well, at Cassian, when it gets very hot, the fish go deeper. And then it's very cold in the winter, that's when they come up shallower, you know. And in the summer, you'll catch them 50, 60 foot. That's quite normal. In the winter, when it gets to sort of late December, you won't catch them over 20 foot normally. You know, you catch them between 10 and 15 foot, because the warmer levels are up near the surface. They're the bits that get warmed up by the sunshine.
Yeah, that's quite the reverse of what we do here.
Yeah, I mean, it's if you never fish deep waters or never fish Cassian, you know, it's different to what you expect. But it sort of teaches you a whole new set of values on what the carp want and where they're comfortable. So yeah, I mean, it's taught me so much over the years, Cassie, and it really has.
Yeah, it's an awe-inspiring place. I mean, I think we've been going for just about an hour. So before we finish, you've got a couple of books out. Do you want to give them a quick plug where people can read more about your
There's two that I've done over the years. The first one was called Cassian and Beyond. It was all about my fishing, really, from when I first started going to Cassian in the mid-80s. And so it covered a lot of my fishing, you know, the raised breed, what we've talked about, and a bit on the Darrett Valley Harefield. But a lot of it was based around Cassian. And then the second book, Carping Horizons, came out a little bit later. And again, it features, well, Rainbow Lake. You know, I started fishing Rainbow Lake a lot more. It still features some of Cassian, but of course features the Black Mirror story as well, which was one of the main reasons for, bringing the book out after catching that. So, yeah, that sort of covers those, what they're all about. A lot of Cassian involved and a bit of Black Mirror.
Yeah, that Black Mirror is a story that needs to be told. I think anyone who's not inspired by that needs, they need slapping with a wet fish. Now,
it's an epic fish, and, people love to hear about fish like that. You know, it wasn't the only great, there's loads of great fish we've had, but, for sure it's one of the greatest, so, I don't need much prompting to tell stories about that.
I certainly rate it. It's right up there. And you also do quite a few YouTube videos nowadays as well. Have you got your own YouTube channel, or do they go out on Nash TV?
I've got my own Steve Briggs YouTube channel. It's a funny thing. It started really through Nash. I was doing various trips here, there, and everywhere, and it was Alan Blair. He said, "Well, why don't you take video camera along and sort of film it?" I've done various bits of filming for sort of Sky programs before in the past, so I thought, okay, I'll have a go at it. I've ended up really enjoying it, actually. I've bought bigger and better cameras, and now it's people ask me about them all the time, and to be honest, when I've put one together, I can't bear to watch it. I look at it, I think, oh my God, it's awful. I hate to watch it. And yet, most of the comments I get are really sort of positive. People seem to like them. So as long as people like them, I'll keep doing them. But, they make me cringe. I can't watch myself.
I know what you mean. I mean, I like watching your videos, Steve, so keep doing them. But I'm the same with these, apart from the first two or three podcasts that record us. I'll listen to the interviews, because it's other people, especially if Jamie's done the interview. But, mine and Jamie's bit, there's a couple where Jamie's been away and I've edited them myself, and I hate the sound of my own voice.
It's funny, isn't it? Yeah.
But, the feedback we get, like you're getting from your videos, is people enjoy it. They enjoy the stories.
It's funny, yeah. It's funny how we get self-conscious about ourselves, and yet other people see it differently, which is just as well, I suppose. it's nice. I enjoy doing them more than, say, writing articles, and I enjoy seeing people at shows. Actually, the most fun I'm having now, apart from the actual fishing itself, is making the film. So happy days of that. I enjoy doing it, so it's all good stuff.
Yeah, it certainly is. We look forward to more coming out, and thanks for talking to us, Steve. Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Big thank you to Briggsy. Super interesting guy. And seems to be getting better at this interviewing game.
Yeah, I've done done Ian Russell and Ian McMillan against since then, which are all coming up, so keep an eye out.
Yeah, something's just made me laugh while that interview was playing out. We spoke earlier about people been sending us messages to our Facebook page and individually and personally, asking where the next show is and stuff. And it is nice to be missed, but the show isn't the priority, and unless it becomes a full-time job, then trying to earn money elsewhere is going to come first, as we said. But Stuart Buckland has just messaged our page a couple of minutes ago. Are Mark and Jamie all right? I'm getting slightly concerned for their well-being. Hopefully they're hauling and have not been kidnapped by the anti-caps. we're alive. Hello. We're alive and well, Stuart, but thanks for the concern. I noticed the Gods of Carp, the Twitter account, has upped his game recently. He's made a few posts that have made me chuckle.
I've not been watching that one lately. I'm going to have to get my finger out on Twitter a bit, I think. I'm more of a Facebook person, but I know we've got well over 1,000 followers on Twitter now on the Carpcast, so
considering I've got nearly 1,000 personal ones as well, and I just don't use Twitter. I'm not my Twitter game is not strong, but at Dustitute is my Twitter handle, so if you want to follow me or whatever, maybe I can get motivated to work on it. I think this Snapchat game is one we need to work on. Snapchat stories is something. Have we got a Carpcast Snapchat page? Seems to be the most popular social media at the minute.
No, we haven't. And I'm just looking at now. I'm just having a quick look at our Instagram page for the Carpcast, which we have got.
Yeah, Instagram and Snapchat are the two biggest current forms of current media, certainly with the younger people. When my daughter says to me, I've got 5,000 friends on Facebook, and she's like, Dad, Facebook's for old people. That's it now. I know I'm old officially when your daughter says, Dad, Facebook's for old people. Bearing in mind, I've been onto social media from the off. I consider myself quite a computer literate. I had Face Party before Facebook, MySpace. It was Face Party, then MySpace, then Facebook, then Twitter, now Snapchat and Instagram. They're kind of the order of popularity, but apparently Facebook's for old people these days.
Yeah, what's Fishing Warehouse for then?
Yeah, well, obviously the forums were before Facebook. They were in the kind of the Face Party era. You had the CMEX RMC forum, you had the Fishing Warehouse, the Northern Monkeys one. Facebook pretty much finished off all of those.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Guess how many followers we've got on Instagram?
Go on.
836.
Does Instagram links to Facebook? That's why, I think, isn't it? It's owned by Facebook.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we have to get them two links up, so when we post a picture on Facebook, it'll go there as well.
Yes, get it done.
Or verse vice.
It's normally verse vice, yeah.
I know what I meant.
We haven't had the details of what's in this week's Carp Tour, but what we do know is it's an essential read, and you can get a digital version. You get a digital version 7 days a week, but it comes out on a Saturday, which is 3 days before the printed version comes out, and it's a bit cheaper. You can get the digital version for only £1.49, and it's available from www.pocketmags.com. You can view it on any device you own, your Apple MacBook, as I have, an Android PC, your iOS device, iPad or whatever. You can download it all from there, pocketmags.com. And you can buy the normal printed version, costs just £1.99. It comes out on a Tuesday. The Bible, if you want to track fish. There's always loads of articles in there. There's a competition in there every single week. And we would love our Carpcast listeners to win the competition every week. I know last week's was LA Carp baits, wasn't it? Some stuff by then. They've had all sorts of stuff. The Summit Tackle Bank Sticks, which I wanted. It's decent. You need to check it out every week. And just make sure you enter the competition. And if you win something, let us know. But get yourself this week's Carp Talk out This is Monday we're doing this now, and it's out tomorrow. On the Tuesday is the printed copy, or you can get a digital copy right now from pocketmags.com. So is that pretty much it for this week? I think I feel like we've waffled on a bit.
Yeah, we've got 2 weeks worth of waffle. So say that quest when you had a drink.
So yeah, I'm not sure if I'm going to get any fishing in before I head to France, but yeah, I've got as I said, a week on Luke Moffitt's Lake. I'm back for like 4 days, and then we're shooting off to Slovenia. Going to go with my girlfriend. We're going to head off in the van. We're going to do it quite cheaply, stay on the campsites, which is on the side of the lake. Another one of my pals is going to go with his girlfriend as well. Spenny, I think she's flying out there. He's going to drive. But yeah, I'm interested. I don't know how much fishing we're going to do. It's a very touristy place. And because we're going with our partners, I think we're going to be doing plenty of eating and drinking, and hopefully get a few days fishing in. But it's not going to be like a hardcore fishing holiday. I get the impression carp angling's not too... I think the people that run the fishing on the lake, that I think they're like game fishermen, trout anglers and stuff. So I'm hearing that... The carp anglers are looked down a bit on. You know, you can't set up a brolly, a bivvy or anything. It's literally daytime fishing, and there's no night fishing. So we're going there with an open mind. Obviously, you know, the reason why we're going there is to have a go at the fishing. Hopefully we'll catch something. But yeah, I'm looking forward to an actual relaxation, sunbathing, eating, drinking and having a merry time. But so yeah, that's end of June and July we're going there, so we'll try and get some carp casts out, or certainly get some material recorded. But in the meantime, I think we can go back to Ben Smethurst, the carp blogger. Check his page out, and let's see how he got on at St. Amand.
In session.
Welcome back to last instalment of myself at St. Amand Leisure, day number 5. Like I said earlier, we're calling it a day early because we've had a fantastic week's fishing, and we're going up to Paris. So far we've had 27 fish. We've had 9 fish today, the biggest of them being 31 pound. All have been 25 and above. So it's been a really good day's fishing today. So just to recap really, if you're coming here with your family, then it's fantastic. If you're coming here as a bunch of lads to have a party, it's fantastic. I can't rate the place highly enough, to be honest. I will be back next year for sure. Yeah, just take a bit of a gamble. It's not a massive fish water for France, you know. There's lakes out there that have 70, 80, 90 pound fish in. But, you know, you're here for good sport, and that's what it is. You know, you've got a good chance of beating your personal best and also catching lots and lots of good fish along the way. So, I've really enjoyed the session. We've got about another hour to go. It's now coming up to 7 p.m, which is bite time on here. So, I'd like to get 3 more to get up to 30, but that's being a bit greedy, really. So if you want to see any more photos or any videos regarding this, check out my YouTube channel, Ben Smethurst, Carp Blogger. Give that a look. Find me on Facebook. So yeah, this is the last one. So have fun. Thanks for having me on. And you lot keep up the good work on the Carpcast. Laters.
In session.
So thanks for listening again. We'll try and get a show out next week. I don't see any reason why we won't. www.carpcast.com if you want to support us. Buy us a drink, tip the tip jar, the Jaffa Cake bucket.
Yeah, fill my bucket with Jaffas. Jaffa Cakes, that is. I think we better just finish now.
Yeah, let's wrap it up. Until next time, see you later.
www.thecarpcast.com. There you'll find extra content, merchandise and lots more to support the show, including our entire back catalogue of free offerings.